Animal welfare means that animals need to have good feeding, good housing, good health, and appropriate behavior. Also, you need to measure all these four principles to have an overall assessment of animal welfare.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
Hi-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Improve bone health and lifetime productivity with Hi-D. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/hy-d. Swine Veterinary Partners is comprised of four clinics across Canada that specialize in swine health, management, research, and development.
Well, good day. Today I have with me Dr. Antonio Velarde, who is located in Catalonia, Spain, as part of the Swinet Podcast Show in Canada. And my name is Ruud Zijlstra. So welcome, Antonio.
Hello. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here with you.
Could you perhaps give us some insights in where you are located and what is your current role and position?
Sure. I'm a researcher working in a research institute that is called IRTA. That is the Institute for Research and Technology in Agri-Food. It's a public institute belonging to the Catalan government in Spain, and we are doing mainly research in animal production and food, and there is different programs, and I'm the head of the animal welfare program.
Oh, interesting, which is actually the topic of today's discussion. So, Antonio, from your perspective, what is animal welfare?
Yes, I mean, animal welfare can be defined, and actually is defined by the World Organization of Animal Health, as the physical and mental state of an animal in relation to the conditions in which it lives and dies. And it includes the welfare, how the animals are on the farm, also during transport and in the slaughterhouse.
Do you then differentiate with these different areas that you do mention, or is animal welfare a similar concern throughout the entire lifespan of a pig?
I mean, the animal welfare is the same, but I mean, it depends how the animals are the factors of the hazards that may impair the animal welfare might be different on farm, during transport, and in the slaughterhouse. But the welfare, the concept of welfare, is the same around the life of the animal.
So how is generally in Spain, what does the general population think about animal welfare, and how do you consider that in your research programs at IRTA?
I mean, the social concern of animal welfare has increased a lot in Spain. Also, when I started 20 years ago, it was not really, I mean, people didn't take care about this, but now, I mean, it has been evolved. I mean, the sensibility to the animals, it has increased. And also not only for the people who don't eat meat, but also the people who eat meat. I mean, it's for them very important the way the animals are handled and are treated. I mean, that you eat meat does not mean that the animals need to suffer. And the way the animals are treated is very important in the sustainable animal production today.
Yeah, interesting. So then from your perspective and from animal scientists generally, how can animal welfare be measured scientifically?
I mean, for the animal welfare, it's important to take into consideration this is a multidimensional subject or a discipline. Also, if you want to measure animal welfare, to have only one single measure is not enough. You have to measure the different topics or the different principles of animal welfare. Also, this is, I mean, the first to define this was the five freedoms in the UK. They were said that animals should have freedom from food, and third, freedom from pain, freedom from disease, and freedom from appropriate behavior. Also, you need to measure all these components of the five freedoms. So now that there is a more newer concept about the five domains. Also, we work in a project that it was welfare quality that we tried or we achieved to measure the animal welfare based of these four principles. I mean, Animal welfare means that animals need to have good feeding, good housing, good health, and appropriate behavior. Also, you need to measure all these four principles to have an overall assessment of animal welfare.
Could you then perhaps give some insights how you then actually go about measuring each of those in detail?
I think there is two type of measurements. You can measure the environment, no? And because the environment, assuming that it may have an impact on the animal welfare. Sorry. For example, you can measure the density, no? How is the stocking density on farm? You can measure the temperature. You can measure the feeding regime. I mean, you are not looking at the animal. You are looking at the management or the surrounding, and thinking that this may have an impact on animal welfare. But the measures that we like more are the animal-based measure, where you are looking directly on the animal. And these are not only behavioral. I mean, if they have aggressive behavior, if they have social behavior, it can be also body condition. It can be an animal-based measure to assess good feeding, or you may assess, for example, manure in the body that gives you information about thermal comfort or stocking density, or you may measure also health on the animal. Also, when it's possible, we try to base our measures on animal-based measures. They're asking directly to the animal how well they are.
Could you perhaps give some insight, for example, how do you actually measure pain in a pig?
Yes, I mean, pain, can you measure actually when the animal, if there is doing mutilations, I mean, you can assess that there is pain, but also you can see in the animal the reaction to pain. You will need at the time, for example, that there is the tail docking or if there is castration, you can see. I mean, and there is now some papers assessing the face expression, how the face changes, and there is some, I mean, the face, the expression of the face, of pain is very characteristic. You can assess also during the following days also a decrease in activity of the animal. They try to protect the area where there is pain, and you can see also physiologically there is an increase of cortisol where there is the pain reaction, and they may last several times to reduce. And also there is some side effect. You know? For example, there is an immunosuppression when there is pain that it may last several days. I mean, there are some indicators also for pain in long and also in short duration.
Yeah, interesting. So then, obviously, pigs are in the barn 24 hours a day. Are you then also exploring a link, for example, to technologies that allowed the use of video cameras or artificial intelligence to make those observations so that you can analyze them later? Or how do you work with that?
I think this is a very interesting question, because there is an increase to provide technology to the farms to detect, very in an early stage, any animal welfare issue. Not only animal welfare, but also disease issue. I mean, the earlier you can detect any problem, the more easier will be to solve it. Also, there is now some farms where you can put some microphones to detect, I mean, an increase of coughing or sneezing that can be an early signal of any health, any disease, any respiratory diseases. And also you can use the use of cameras to identify, for example, lameness, lame animals, or to identify if there is any problem for aggression or stereotypes. Yes, I think there is an increase now in technology, also sensors that you can put to the animals to identify if there is any problem. And I think this is the future, the technification of the farms to identify these problems.
So one of the important freedoms that you mentioned was freedom of movement. And of course, that ties to activity. So How are you working on that, monitoring animal activity as an indicator of animal welfare?
Animal movement, the need of space. I mean, it's important to have enough space to move. I mean, if they want to go to feed or to drink, they have this space, but also they need the space to rest all at the same time in the clean area and avoid the dirty area. And also for social interaction, they need time. I mean, one of the measures that we can use to detect the lack of space is assessing, for example, the percentage of dirty animals, because normally if they have enough space, all of them, they will try to lie in the clean area and not to go to the dirty area. So if you see dirty animals, dirty pigs in the pen, it's because either they are too hot, I mean, heat stress, they will, the animals will lie to the fresh area that normally is the dirty to refresh, or the other consequence because they don't have enough space in the clean area or to lie, and they need to go to the dirty area. This will be one of the indicators that we use.
I'm pretty sure that pork producers are pretty good at understanding food or feed intake on a pen basis. How do you deal with that on a per animal basis?
We only assess animal welfare, and so we assess when it's a welfare issue. What we are assessing is in sows, you can do assess by body condition score, and there is a lot of research. Sure. I've been doing the evaluation by visual inspection and also palpation. And I mean, for growing pigs, is also you can see two thin animals, but normally in growing pigs, it's associated with other disease, I mean, health disease or other type of problem. But the main, I mean, if we want to use animal based measure, what we use is the body condition score.
Yep, thank you. So then, when you are where you are located, what are some of the main welfare issues in swine production from your perspective?
Yes, where I'm located, and also in the European Union, here now there is a social initiative to ban all type of cages. Also, there was a popular initiative that get enough signature to include this topic in the European Parliament. Also now, is a lot of research, a lot of concern to eliminate the cages from the pig production here. As you know, there is now, I mean, it's mandatory to have a gestating sows in group housing of gestating sows from week four after insemination until the first week before the farrowing. Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, there is a lot of work to eliminate the farrowing crates and to work with farrowing pens. And also, I mean, during the first, after the insemination, also the 4 weeks after insemination, also to eliminate the crates. I mean, this is a hot topic now. And the other is mutilations. I mean, how not to tail dog without the problem of tail biting. And this here is a work behind this.
So then, of course, sows not being in gestation crates, that has already been a topic for many years. And it's already been banned. And also here in Canada, some producers have moved to free housing of sows during gestation. Also, that is happening in the US, you know, with Prop 12, I believe it's called, in California. So then when you then look at the first 4 weeks of gestation, so between insemination to, well, they normally go into group housing, what do you see as the challenge there for going to group housing of sows during that stage, so immediately after insemination?
I mean, there is also some commercial the farms are doing just insemination and release in groups. And because I mean the main problem is if the animals the stress that may produce when there is the implantation of the embryos, that this is after the first week, but if there is if the animals are released in group just after insemination, I think they, with good practice, it might be feasible. And also there is in some countries that they start to be the normal practice, like in the Netherlands.
But then for those first 4 weeks, they keep them in a separate group so that they're easy to check if they're indeed pregnant or they, how do
they? Yes, they put in a group and they do the checks to maintain if they are pregnant or they have to be re-inseminated again. Yeah.
And then once it is confirmed, they move them into the larger group or they keep on having them separate?
Yes, I mean, it depends how large are the groups. I mean, because normally here is sometimes they are very large group where there is a dynamic groups where there is cells from different edge of gestation and they are going in and going out depending when there is. And there is also other farms that normally they are moving in smaller groups and they are all together. They are all in and all out. Also they have the insemination together and they have the gestation together.
And then for sows that are housed during lactation, so following farrowing, what do you see as some of the issues there to go to a housing system without cages?
I mean, it's not mandatory. I don't know. Maybe now it's a revision of the legislation in the European Union and we will see what will happen next. But here, the challenge is the first week after farrowing that, I mean, if the animals, the sows have more space for moving, there is an increase in pigless mortality. Also, the challenge here, what they try to do is at least to have maybe to have the first days the animal restricted, and once the piglets are more active, then you can give also more space to the sows to move around. And this is. I mean, this is a practice that is now being incorporated and there is a lot of research now for the future. Also, the first days to hoof in a restricted environment for the sows and then release a little bit more for moving around when the animal is, I mean, when the pigs are more active.
And then would in that housing system, would a sow still be with the piglets in a confined space? Or is there also a move towards group housing of lactation sows?
This will be another stage. And I mean, do you mean to have in a group how in a group? I mean, this I think now there are more the research in lactation pens.
Yes.
I mean, when the animals the sows are in the individual pens, but I mean they have a space to turn around and to move. I mean, a little bit more, but I have seen also some research where the sows, they are in pen and they have also the piglets, they can move from one place to the other to see other litter. And this is also good because it increases the immunity. And then during the transition, I mean, the animals are healthier or they can cope better with the mixing and the new feeding.
If you could look in your crystal ball, what do you predict will happen? That it first will go to more space for individual lactating sows and have some kind of a crate system that you can open up? Is that what you see in the near future happening?
Yeah, yes, I think now in the future it will go for individual pens. I mean, when there will be a transitory during the first days, there will be a restriction. It will be in a crate because... now it has not been solved the mortality, and then maybe in the future it can go there. But it's not only the pen. Also, it's important to work on the genetic of the sows, because nowadays it has not been important. I mean, the maternity traits of the mother was not the priority. But I think if we achieve to have more sows that have a better maternal behavior, this can be reduced also, the piglet mortality. I mean, the genetic of the sows now is for the crates, and I think it need to be worked also to have to modify the genetic according to the new housing systems.
Yeah, interesting. Another one that you mentioned was till docking. So what is happening there? Is there some legislation on the horizon that people are concerned about not being able to till dock anymore? Or what's happening there?
Actually, the European legislation already banned routine till docking. It's only said that only when there is not other way to prevent till biting. But in the practice, is that most of the countries, they tail dock in a routine way. I mean, there are some countries like Sweden, Finland, where there is not allowed. And the normal practice is not to tail dock. Also, most of the countries now is doing a practice that is forbidden by legislation. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's a multifactorial problem, it's very difficult to prevent, but it can be prevented because we have examples in Sweden and in Finland. I mean, that they don't have much better housing conditions, because you may think no, because they are on a straw all the time, but it's not the case. And they manage to prevent or not to have a very high prevalence of tail biting without tail docking. Also now, the idea is to put more effort and prevent tail biting without tail docking. Also, you have to check what are the most important factors and to control this in your farm. But it's not easy to solve, but I think there is putting a lot of effort to avoid tail docking.
So then just to follow up on that, what are some of the preventive measures that producers in Scandinavia are then using to prevent till docking? Like, what are they doing differently?
What is important, I mean, the main factors to have into consideration is the space. I mean, the more space. I mean, and there is a relationship. When there is high stocking density, the risk of till biting is higher. Also, the enrichment, to have appropriate enrichment where the animals can spend time doing the foraging behavior, the exploratory behavior. Also to check the diet, I mean the ventilation. But what they have important is that they have changed the concept. I mean, the farmers now are trained or know how to identify it in an early time the biters and the bitten animals, and they can be handled. I mean, if the biters are identified and you are trained how to know when a biter start to bite and separate from the group, and the bitten also to handling, I think this is also important. It's a change of paradigm, and the farmers has to change and to say, okay, and maybe always will be a small prevalence of tail biting. And for example, for the bitten tail, the bitten animal, maybe it's not very, I mean, it's painful, but in general, for the animals that has been not tail dog, the welfare will be better. Also, it's not easy, because it's not that you have a guidance and say, if you follow this, because each farm might have his own problem or the factors. It may be also genetics or environmental. But because they have already achieved this, I think they say, I mean, we have to find a way to be the same in all the European or in all the farms.
It's time for our famous three.
Why Zenetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads. We elevate voices. Curious how far your voice can go to become a reference in the industry and attract more leads? Scan the QR code and discover how we can turn your expertise into unmatched brand authority. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
space and enrichment you've mentioned a few times in a conversation about very important for animal welfare. Do you consider those to be key factors of or key parts of preventative measures all throughout pig production?
I think space is an important issue, to have enough space to rest and to explore, but also to lie, and also for to prevent heat stress. The space is also very, very important. And here we can, in Spain, that we have very hot summers. I mean, the way the animals, the pigs, have to dissipate heat is by lying. I mean, they don't sweat. I mean, they don't pant. They are not very efficient panting. Also, when they have to thermoregulate, normally they lie in a lateral position. Also, they need much more space. And you can see here that there is a dramatic stop of increasing weight when there is in the summer. And enrichment is also important because, I mean, not all the material is appropriate as enrichment material. I mean, we have to take into consideration that tile biting is not an aggressive behavior. It's a redirected behavior due to the frustration of the pigs to explore and not be able to do this. Also, we need to put material that will be appropriate to allow the animals to do this behavior. That is a behavioral need for the animals, for the pigs especially, to explore the environment and to forage. So this is important. And sometimes the renewal or change this material is also important. It's not always to have this, the ball that the, maybe that is distorted, is a corner on the pen, and the animals lost the interest to this. And so it's important to check this, and also to check if pigs are really using this material.
Well, this was a very interesting conversation. If people would like to follow up, what might be some of your favorite swine-related resources, perhaps related to animal welfare?
Yes, I mean, for these topics that we have discussed today, I like to the opinions of the EFSA. EFSA is the European Food Safety Authority, and they have a web page. And what EFSA do is EFSA does is to provide the scientific support for the implementation of the new legislation of the European Union. Also, you can see now in 22, they produce an opinion of pig welfare, and you can see a summary, a compilation of all the last scientific papers. I mean, and doing this. And they have the pig welfare on farm. What are the main hazards, the main welfare problems? What are the preventive measures? And also welfare of pigs during transport and in the slaughterhouse. I mean, I think there is three opinions, one for the farm, for the transport, and for the slaughterhouse. And they are free. I mean, if you go to the webpage of EFSA, or you put EFSA pig welfare, you can get these opinions.
Very interesting. Do you have any favorite resources outside of looking at pigs that you look at?
I mean, in a more general and also out of welfare, there is an encyclopedia of meat science, where it has been included also terminology of animal welfare, but there is also about nutrition, genetic, etc. What I like also to explore in a more general way is the concept of one welfare that is similar to one health. I mean, the one welfare describes also the interconnection between animal welfare, human well-being, and also the physical and social environment. It's very interesting how linked is the welfare of the animals and the welfare of the human, and how is the interconnection among this. And I think this is a very interesting topic also to follow up.
Well, I thank you very much for your interesting insights today, Antonio. and that you provide out of Spain. Very good to have a conversation with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.